The Struggle with Alyssa.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall in Vancouver, Washington. The theme of the 7th annual Juneteenth celebration is Together We Rise. This theme addresses the idea that together we rise above the fray of hatred, despair, and discord. The celebration features a job fair, panels, awards, contests, an art gallery, live entertainment, and more. Again, that's the 2019 Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 22nd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Clark College Hanna Hall, 1933 Fort Vancouver Way in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, everyone. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This is The Struggle, a show where we speak to people doing good work in the community, to ask them about their work, and to try to get you to support them. This week on the show, I have Olivia Pace.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Olivia Pace is one of the key leaders of the Disarm PSU movement at Portland State University, working to dismantle the police and particularly the armament of police, which is new. There's nothing inevitable about it. And sadly, we know that it's deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be discussing how that intersects with some of the protests around police at Pride, not just in Portland, but globally. Olivia, if you want to just give us a little bit of a prelude about the work that you do and that action that you took place in or that you took part in at Portland State University around No Pride in Police.
Yeah, so I have been at Portland State University for 5 years. I'm about to graduate, and almost my entire time at Portland State University has revolved around organizing against the armament of our campus police, which, as Alyssa said, is something that is new, is something that students in recent memory organized against, and something that the school implemented anyway. The unelected Board of Trustees, the governing body of our school, voted to create an armed and sworn police force on our campus on June 11, 2015, and this directly intersected with the rise in the Black Lives Matter movement. And ever since then, there's been a slowly and then not so slowly building movement called Disarm PSU that has continued to push back against the presence of police on our campus and against our administration and our Board of Trustees increasing state capacity to oppress and increasing policing on our campus. And it's especially, that movement has especially increased in strength and in aggression since the murder of Jason Washington, an innocent Black man on our campus who was de-escalating a fight. And so recently, the Portland State Student Union took part in a small but important action where we occupied a space in front of the campus public safety office because there was a installation that was put in front of the office that included a painting on the ground depicting the colors of the Pride flag, the rainbow representing gay people, queer people, the blue, white, and pink representing trans people, and black and brown for black and brown people. And this really disturbed us because we understand that police presence and police violence is antithetical to the maintaining of the livelihood and the thriving of queer people and of black and brown people. We actually found out through the work and through putting on this event that the people who first came up with the concept of this installation where students could convene and they would have this painting that would represent Pride was actually put together by students, by well-intentioned students, but there was a blind spot in placing this in front of campus public safety. And mm-hmm. we found out that Portland State University put no checks and balances on these people doing this installation in the whole process. And I believe that that is because Portland State University knows how it looks to put a rainbow painting in front of their police station.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it look like their police officers are friendly to queer people and trans people. And whether or not they think that's true, we have to understand that the origins of the fight for gay liberation, for trans liberation for all black and brown, queer and trans people starts with an aversion to policing, with a fighting back of policing and of how police control specifically trans people's bodies. And so there is no way that you can align Pride with policing.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up the policing of trans bodies. This is something that cannot be ignored right now because there is a uptick in the reporting mm-hmm. on particularly black trans women
mm-hmm.
being targeted and murdered. And something that is so often missed that is disheartening to me is that people understand this as sort of what it is on its face. They're not wrong, but they think that this is just some bigoted people, probably some like closeted guys, you know, who are acting out their sexual aggression against trans women. And that's certainly true. But come on, we have to be good materialists here. And we have to understand that interpersonal violence springs from systemic violence and state violence. And I argue, and I think some of the best people who are theorizing around trans justice know that it is because particularly Black trans women are at an intersection of precarity and targeting that it's very difficult for trans women, Black trans women particularly, to get a foothold in a job, housing, education, the basics of life that are needed to thrive in order to to have a dignified life, one that is free of the kind of danger that we often have to put ourselves in order to be able to survive. So that this is not outside of a state violence framework, and I just never want people to forget that, because the people who enforce state violence first and foremost are the police.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the state is in police, and the state is in the people who are tasked with granting us our basic rights, do not show humanity towards trans people, towards queer people. And we know that our laws and the policies that are put in place by our governments and that are influenced by the elite, by people who run these big corporations that influence our politics, those things do have an effect on how people see each other and on what behavior we see as normal and we see as okay. And if the state can't grant humanity towards trans people, then how do we expect society to grant that humanity? We are taught that it is okay. We are taught that trans people are actually not human, that they are something different, that they are doing something wrong. And that message implicitly says that it is okay to kill them and that it is their fault if they die, because you were acting out something that is averse to what is normal and what is socially acceptable. And we know that that is not just happenstance. It's not just because people think that being trans is gross or weird or bad, but that oppression based on identity to me occurs in a series of pillars that hold up a capitalist system that benefit a very few people. And if you can separate people so staunchly and in ways that are violent, that are toxic, that are harmful, that degrade people on a mental, physical, and emotional basis, if you can separate people in that way, by the time we realize that all of these things are really constructs, they've already won. They've already taken everything away from us. The people at the top are causing us to point fingers at each other.
Sure.
And that's not to minimize gender and race and sexual orientation and all those identities. They have real manifestations that, and we can see that when we see transgender women being killed every single day, specifically Black transgender women. But we can't just look at that as a single issue and say, oh, well, we have to end transphobia by slapping pink, white, and blue and rainbow on the front of stores, in advertisements, in just spreading more awareness. And I'm saying that in quotes. We need to figure out how this systemic violence is being perpetuated and why it is allowed. And I believe that is because a very few people who hold the wealth in this world benefit from the people they're exploiting, not seeing humanity in each other, and therefore not being able to resist them.
So this, I keep coming back to the origins of pride. And while I know that many people who already know this, this is a refresher, so congratulations, you already know, you're very woke, you're knowledgeable, we think you're fabulous. Pride itself was a celebration of a community victory against police violence, against raids in Stonewall. Stonewall is a bar. It's still there. The Stonewall Inn. I took you there when we went to New York. Mm-hmm. The Stonewall Inn is legendary now. I think it's a historical place. But 50 years ago, and this is 50 years since Stonewall, June 28th is the 50-year anniversary, where the police were just doing their jobs, just enforcing the law. And what that meant was going into establishments where there was perceived gay activity, which was illegal there and everywhere else in the country. And chief among those crimes was quote-unquote cross-dressing. And they used to do genital checks. And if your genitals did not match what they thought you should be wearing, well, then you would be thrown in the back of a paddy wagon. You'd probably get beat down. And the police could do whatever they wanted to you, and they did some horrific things. And this was the norm. And this was the night that people decided to fight back. Mm-hmm. And the fight was led by, no surprise here, trans women of color who continue to be the people who are targeted by the police. And this is why I understand that there are some people who earnestly feel protected by the police. They are mostly white, middle class, cis people. And that's not to say that they're not valid, that they shouldn't be in this movement. But I just wish that there was more attention paid to the violence that police enact on people who are not like them. They're black and brown counterparts. They're trans counterparts. It's very disheartening to me that people don't understand that with poverty comes police violence almost across the board. And people under the LGBT spectrum are no exception. In fact, they are often targeted because they're so easily picked off. Mm-hmm. And this cannot be ignored. And I wanted to reiterate this and situate people so that we know where we've been, so that we can even begin to chart a path to where we want to go. I think some of the best organizing is happening at Portland State University around pushing back against some of this sort of like cop washing, which is a big problem because Portland State University is known around the world as having one of the most rich and well-funded queer resource centers, where queers from all over the world who can manage to pull it off through grants or family money go to Portland State University in order to look for queer community. And then they go and they see armed police in their face, and they're told that they should feel safe, and yet they don't. And you know this better than most.
Yeah, it's very funny at this point. The way that Portland State University deploys diversity politics, you will see people of every race, religion, gender presentation on the advertisements for different programs for the school. And that, first of all, is not a reality because our school is majority white, like Portland is, though it's a little more diverse than Portland. But this is it's really just lip service to the people that they want to bring into the community to bring money and to bring clout with their skin color, with their gender presentation, with their religion, because they don't actually value what those people are bringing, because diversity has to be more than just what you look like, right? If we're talking about diversity, it should be a diversity of people, and what that comes with, the diversity of their experiences, diversity of their thoughts, diversity of their ideas, because experiences of the experience of being black, of being trans, of being queer is something that is important, that can inform your politics and inform your ideas around how we can make this world less harmful. But Portland State University doesn't really care about that latter part. They really just care about how you look and what that makes the school look like to outsiders. And this is made very clear through the fact that PSU students, staff, and faculty, specifically faculty from departments that deal with social issues, that deal with social well-being and violence, have been so clear for now 5 years, maybe probably more than 5 years, longer than I've been around, that we do not want more police on our campus. And I want to do a little aside, because something the university will always say is, well, do you trust PBB? And the answer is no, we don't trust Portland Police. But there are two distinctions. One, Portland Police technically is in a way, we have some kind of democratic oversight over that. So that's a difference, despite the fact that they still fail on multiple levels and that there's still a fundamental change that needs to happen there. That's a difference. We don't have any democratic oversight over anything that happens at the university, and that's a crime because it's a public university and the students make it up. Secondly, we need to, Portland State University always claims to be innovative, so we need to be forward thinking in that we want to think about the world that we want to see, which is a world where safety does not mean police officers who carry around guns and tasers and can kill people who they supposedly feel threatened by and get away with it scot-free, where safety means something that is built by our community, that is envisioned by our community, and that makes, and that doesn't just handle violence, but also takes care of the people who are enacting violence and takes care of the people who experience violence. And so Portland State University has continually ignored these words and this request from student, staff, and faculty. And so this idea of diversity and of caring about all the different kinds of people who come into the school is completely a farce, because when those people are actually at the table screaming, making it very clear what they need, having a central demand, they do everything they can to skirt around that.
I remember when I was at Portland State University and was taking part in Disarm PSU demonstrations, and we told the former president who ushered this in, Vim Vivel, who's now at Lewis and Clark, by the way. So if anyone listening goes to Lewis and Clark or knows someone that goes there, and you want to organize around your president, maybe give me a call at the station.
Yeah, do some research on that man.
So we warned him about Sam Dubose, an unarmed black man killed by campus police in Ohio. And we always knew that if they armed campus police, that it would mean eventually that someone would get killed, an innocent person would get killed by the police, because this is what they do. And I didn't think it would happen so quickly. Jason Washington was a father, a husband, a grandfather, a vet, a postal worker, a union activist, and a black man who was trying to break up a fight. And Portland Police shot...
Portland State Police.
Portland State University Police, thank you, who are deputized by the Portland Police.
Yes.
And I want to get into, after we go into and pay respect to Jason Washington, I want to speak about why it is that the abolitionist demand about expanding police is so important to come in here. It's not that we support or trust Portland Police, but we are staunchly against the expansion of new police. But please talk a little bit about Jason as a person, the occupation, and the image of you that's going a little bit viral online, at least on the Portland left. Give yourself some credit of your cap for graduation that says PSU killed Jason Washington, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of Jason Washington as a person, I can only speak to what I've heard from his family, who are some of the loveliest, kindest, and strongest people that I've ever met. And I think that is a testament to who he was, not just because he influenced them, but these are the kinds of people that he had in his life, and these are the children that he raised, and the grandchild that he helped to raise. And so it's a testament to what the kind of person that they say he was, which is somebody who was kind, who was always there, who would give everybody a chance, who wanted to help everybody, who, if you were his friend and you needed help, it wasn't a question of if he could help you, it was a question of how he was going to help you. And again, that shows, and just his family has shown me and other organizers a lot of kindness in a period of their life where they are not, where nobody is entitled to their kindness. And we have not asked that of them because we have no reason to. And yet they are still very just like
warm. When did you meet them?
I met them. I met his brother a little while after he was killed. So it must. I think it was a couple weeks. We had a rally a couple days after Jason Washington was killed that we actually planned in the few hours after he was killed at 1:30 a.m. on June 29th. And we, before it even came out, we had seen the video, and the video was very grainy because it wasn't the dash cam video or it wasn't the body cam video. So we really couldn't tell. We couldn't tell what race he was. We couldn't tell what was happening. But we saw what it was. We saw that this person was not a threat. That was the main thing. And so we began organizing immediately. And it was really an overnight restarting of the energy of this campaign, because it felt extremely heavy to me and to Alyssa and to those of us who've been working on this for years, because it's one thing to organize around a hypothetical death of a person, and then it's another thing to see like the fears that you've been organizing around actually manifest in like the single person. And so we started organizing the rally before they even announced who he was, and showed the photo, which was a very big moment to see that he was black. So that eventually happened. The rally had already been organized, and then we were able to include his name. And we didn't have a connection with the family because we knew very little about him. I had made a quick connection with one of his daughters on Instagram. Then the family came to the rally. And then a couple weeks later, I was able to meet his brother. And then over time, we've built a more consistent relationship with them, and just trying to keep them in the loop on what's going on the campus, because they do see part of justice for him as taking the guns away from the officers who shouldn't have had those guns in the first place, so that nobody loses their life in this way again. And in terms of my cap, I mean, I'm graduating. I've been at the school for 5 years. I'm one of the very few people who starts at Portland State University as a freshman and graduates all the way through. Most people who start first-time freshman at PSU do not finish, which is something I've recently learned. That is, yeah, transfers finish, but first-time freshmen at PSU don't make it through all the time. So I did. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And I just didn't think I would be I just didn't really see myself dealing with this stuff on the level that I am still up until like the days I was ending all of this and past my graduation, especially on this level and dealing with the death of a person on our campus, the death of a black man on our campus. So, I don't know anybody who I've organized with who doesn't feel like we have to walk out naming all of the horror that Portland State University has committed. And so my cap says PSU killed Jason Washington. And and people respond well to that. And I've seen other people who are making their caps say political statements related to disarm PSU. And I'm not a person who's really big on university pride. University, and I mean pride for your university, not university gay pride, but whatever. Universities are increasingly privatized institutions, whether they're public or private. They commit crimes against humanity. Killing Jason Washington was inhumane, was a murder, and we can't say that legally, but that is what I'm calling it. That's what I see it as. I think it's wrong for you to know the extent to which your university has harmed people in your community, not just Jason Washington, but others too. And to ignore that just for the sake of, you know, having fun at your graduation. I'm still gonna have fun and turn up and do whatever, and you know, but I'm gonna walk out saying the same thing that I did when I walked in, which is that which is that bully, which has evolved in the 5 years that I've been in school, but that the policing system needs to be destroyed and we need to rebuild something that is community-based. A lot of times we say fundamentally restructure, and I slip into that sometimes, but I forget that we need to say the policing system as it stands right now needs to be fully destroyed. It is broken, and that is because it's directly descended from slave patrols, from the policing of property and black and brown bodies. And so it doesn't matter how many nice cops you have. I truly do believe that a handful of the cops at Portland State University are genuinely well-intentioned people, and that means absolutely nothing to me. Because the policing, because we still see the systematic killing of black and brown people, and it cannot just be that we have employed evil cops all over the country. I don't believe people are evil. I believe capitalism is evil. I believe it builds systems that protect property and not people. And when you train people to think more about the well-being of property than people, that has devastating effects.
Mm. So I'm just wanting to circle back to why we do not say that we want the Portland police to sort of take over for all of the duties of the Portland State University campus security. Yeah. The reason that we were always against this sort of from an abolitionist perspective is because this offers new power, legitimacy, and millions of dollars invested in the campus security as and deputized by Portland police. This is an expansion of police power and presence, and armed police at that. And now we know deadly police at that. So, no, it's not that we think that Portland police are a fantastic institution that are peace-loving and just. In fact, just the opposite. But the idea that we should expand the role of police is just absolutely the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So it's not that we prefer one over the other, but what we prefer is not expanding it out and offering it more money and legitimacy and opportunities to hurt people.
Yeah, absolutely. And logistically, the reality is if we dissolve our police force and do what the student union and other students have been suggesting, which is to think about programs like CAHOOTS and Eugene that responds to houseless people specifically, which in Portland make up the majority of arrests that PPD makes. If we think about solutions like that that involve mental health crisis workers and social workers responding to calls of people who seem like they are having mental health issues or safety issues, and if we're proactive rather than reactive in looking at what is actually causing violence on our campus, what is actually causing people to lack safety and to lack a good quality of life on our campus, and then we look at resources like food security, housing security, and we actually do some real thinking about what causes things like sexual violence and domestic violence. We can undercut that kind of violence and we can undercut that kind of insecurity before something goes wrong. And then the only person you have to call is somebody with a gun. And the reality is if we do that, there will be less of a presence of PPD on our campus. PPD, frankly, this is all logistical. Like this is all aside from the abolitionist perspective. PPD doesn't want to respond to Portland State calls. They don't care that much, frankly. That's what we hear from our administration. They claim to be understaffed. No police station is understaffed because police shouldn't exist. They claim to be understaffed and they don't want to respond. And so PSU's idea is, well, if you don't trust, their idea was if you don't trust Portland police, then we'll create our own police force and it'll be better. And it hasn't been. And we believe that fixing a bad police department by creating a new police department is really just adding to the problem. There's a reason that people of color and trans people often do not call the police. And so not only are you increasing the capacity for violence to occur against those communities, but you're continuing to leave those communities with nobody to turn to when they are in harm's way. I would like there to be some person, some organization, something I could call if I am in harm's way, if I am in a situation of sexual violence, domestic violence, if I do feel like I'm seeing somebody who needs help right then and there. I'm not going to call the police because I don't want people to go to jail. I don't want somebody to get shot and killed because they hurt me. And I don't want to be shot and killed because I'm Black and I don't trust the police. And I think if the police show up at the wrong time and they think the wrong thing, then I might die too. And so it's not just that the police might kill you, but we're only looking at what protects white cis students. We're not looking at what resources marginalized people have and lack to address the issues that they face. And so it is not a question of more police. The policing system continues to fail us over and over and over again. And we believe that the way that that specifically the American policing system is set up is fundamentally fundamentally cannot serve specifically people of color in a just way, because professional policing in America has direct ties in its origins to slave patrols. That is a fact. and people love to use the rhetoric of, well, slavery is in the past, let's move on towards the future. Mm-hmm. Black people are doing amazing things and racism is blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Why are you so invested in a system that has its origins in slavery? Mm-hmm. If we want to put slavery in the past, then we should put slavery in the past and build a new system.
Yeah. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. You're listening to The Struggle on Cable Community Radio 90.7 FM. I'm in the studio with Olivia Pace, an organizer with the Portland State University Student Union, spearheading the Disarm PSU campaign. The Portland State University Student Union, or SUSU, the P is silent, is a group that is way overrepresented, I would say, with queer people. And I think this is something that should not be lost on anyone who's paying attention to this organizing, or really any organizing around justice for people who are affected by police violence. This is really important because there is something here about queers versus gays. And of course, this is not a real sort of one versus the other. I'm just trying to put them in comparison to one another. Many queers call themselves that, even though they know that that word has a sort of mixed history, where it is regarded by some as being derogatory and insulting. But the reason that they are moving away from gay or LGBTQIA plus is because they feel like that has been so sort of taken by institutions that support oppressive systems. And Pride is a culmination of that, of course, because that's the one day a year that we're all supposed to get together and have a party. But this sort of no pride in police and corporations out of pride as a call are very key, because they're being led by queer and trans people who are already beat down, by homophobia and transphobia, and now have to launch a fight within their own community and identity group and groupings. And I think SUSU is a great example of that. The powerful queer and trans people who work with this group are really crucial in the work.
Yeah, SUSU has always overrepresented, I hate using that word because it sounds like it has a negative connotation, but it has always had a plethora of queer people, of non-binary people, of transgender people, of like people of multiple sexual orientations and gender identities in our organization. And we put that at the forefront, and we And it is, and if you organize with us, it is important that you understand that that is a part of that person's humanity, and you must respect it, and it is one of the core tenets of our organizing, which is something that is really important to me. And I feel like one of the biggest factors in this kind of false dichotomy that Alyssa was laying out, gay versus queer, is, you know, the history of what the mainstream gay rights movement has looked like.
Assimilationism.
And people, yeah. And people, people, for their own ease, for their own sake, grouping every issue that a LGBTQIA plus person might face under the banner of marriage rights and of these very liberal things that are placed like in the legal realm and the reality, and that is a diversion away from some much stickier issues. Mm-hmm. And also a diversion away from what will liberate queer people, which is an anti-capitalist perspective and an anti-capitalist movement, a revolutionary movement, because marriage is a way to perpetuate a family unit which upholds a capitalist economy.
You get great tax benefits.
That's not to say that you shouldn't get married, and if you get married, you're a horrible person. But that is the purpose of that unit in our society. And so you can't tell me that it's so important, of the utmost importance, that my trans friends have rights to get married to people with the same genitals as them, when some people are worried about being murdered. Yeah, I get really frustrated because it just feels a lot of the time like it's for the ease of straight people and of cis gay people. Like today I heard somebody say, oh, the LGBTQ murders. I'm like, no, they're not LGBTQ murders. They are murders of very specific people, of specifically like dark skin transgender women. And that is specific, and that is happening for a specific reason, and it is happening because of oppressions that white gay men, white gay women do not face. It has to do with our notions of masculinity, with our hatred for black women, with our hatred for black bodies, with things that we think women owe men, and with rights that we think men have to bodies in general. And we have to be clear about that if we want to stop that violence. And those are all things that are rooted in neoliberal and capitalist ideas. That is not somehow, that's not a step away on a staircase from gay marriage. Those are in two different realms. Those are in two different ideological realms.
It's fabulous. I just want to remind people that police have not always even wanted to be in Pride. One of the things that people will note about the comment that the Portland police gave to our local weekly paper after DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, of which we are members, put out a statement from the Queer Caucus that called to the floor exactly what we're speaking about today. And the police responded and said that they will very proudly march in the parade. Now, this is very important because the image of the police is one that is being shifted and remolded in front of our very eyes. So, of course, like I said earlier, Pride, as we know it, started out as a rebellion against police violence, against raids. This is only 50 years ago now that this sort of public gay activity was criminal and would absolutely get you in jail, get your name in the paper, get you fired from your job, get you pushed out of your family and your communities. All of this stuff is true. Then we move into the police working to undercut organizing that queers did over the decades. They absolutely were not marching in any parades. They didn't want anything to do with it. But because there is an impending crisis, because public opinion is shifting away from this idea of the unassailable police force, that they're here to serve us, while that has not ever been universally believed, it is becoming less and less accepted by the general populace. And that requires a PR or public relations maneuver. And in a city like Portland, which prides itself on its being progressive, and that's another show, one of the things that will be so important is that the police nominally are in favor of the LGBT community. It will be necessary for them to continue to do what they do, which is to kill and maim citizens. Again, I want to bring in my guest from a few weeks ago, Peggy Zebroski, Zebroski. Please, people, look in the show notes from weeks past and Google what they did. They cracked her orbital bone in her skull, broke her nose, dragged her in the street for participating in a protest with Don't Shoot Portland, of which I'm a member, and it was for Not My President's Day. And they are as brutal as our worst nightmares might tell us, but yeah, they march in pride, and that's meant to make you think that they're not as bad as they are, to make you forget about Peggy. And to forget about Quanis Hayes, who she was protesting for, who was killed by police, a 17-year-old, who they then tried to frame as a gangster. So I want to just bring that in again.
Yeah, and I mean, and this shouldn't be thought of as like an individual issue, what I'm going to say, but as an indication of how the policing system is so violent and how it changes and really negatively influences and affects the people who participate in it. We can't forget that 40% of police officers, or not, I should reframe that. If you are married to a police officer, 40% chance that you are going to be domestically abused by that person. Sorry, I keep saying this wrong. 40% of police officers commit domestic abuse against their partners. That's a stat. Police officers...
I'll link that stat in my show notes.
Yeah, thank you. Police officers disproportionately harass and assault trans people compared to the rates that they harass and assault, specifically sexually assault, other people.
I'll also include that in my show notes. Yes, important.
So I don't want to hear about police officers being in favor of the queer community, of the LGBTQ IA plus community, as long as there is still the systemic violence and a capacity for the systemic violence. Because even if I'm not seeing a trans person or a black person be assaulted or be killed every single day in front of my face, I still understand that the system is set up to where when that does happen, they are able to get away with it. It is permissed. And they are always going to be seen as rational actors who are defending their lives and whose lives were worth more than the people who they harmed. And as long as you have the capacity to do that, and as long as you're wearing that uniform, you are against the LGBTQ community. Oh, sure. Whether or not you feel that way, whether or not you're a part of it. Because your place in this system that allows for people to be murdered trumps any identity that you have.
Especially because the reports that we're getting about the police officers who violate people's human rights, who act with violence, sometimes even with deadly force, those reports don't come from other police officers.
No.
They never do. Because of what they call the blue wall of silence, where even if you are not a violent police officer yourself, if you've never laid hands on someone, if you've never punched someone in the face, if you've never choked someone out, if you've never kicked someone in the ribs when they're trying to sleep and they're on the street, which is very common.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, great. But I'm sure you've seen it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever reported it? I don't think so.
And the very few who do are known to be ostracized, and their lives are ruined, and they sometimes experience harm from their so-called brothers in blue.
Well, sure, and they're not celebrated as whistleblowers either, but rather as traitors.
Yeah, and they're not... Yeah, and when we have police... Like, I don't hear about police whistleblowers in the news the way I hear about military whistleblowers and like, government whistleblowers. Like, it's not... It is not normalized. We see police action as rational, even though it is extremely irrational to think that any call that you get from a civilian requires a deadly weapon and multiple non-lethal weapons and backup and a squad car with siren. Like, that's not a rational response to issues that people are facing. And yet we continue to see police as rational actors.
So I want to bring it back quickly because we've got about 10 minutes left and I want to give it up here where it's deserved. So one of the leaders of the Stonewall Rebellion and then in the Gay Liberation Front that followed and the original prides that took place in New York, LA, San Francisco were spearheaded by a firebrand named Sylvia Rivera. Sylvia Rivera is so important here. She's a Puerto Rican trans woman, like yours truly. Hello. had to storm the stage at one of the first pride celebrations in New York City, despite the fact that she was one of the people that helped to galvanize the riots that pride at that point was professing to be celebrating. But that's another story because they've moved away so far away from anything resembling rebellion. But she made her way up to the stage. Once she was there, she was being booed from the outset. And she screamed into a mic, despite the fact that people didn't even want her to be on stage because the rule of the day was, and I quote, no blacks, no spics, and no queens, because the people who had managed to seize the levers of power of the burgeoning pride as we know it were seeking to assimilate themselves to such a degree that they would be accepted by